The Royal Commission into the Protection and Detention of Children in the Northern Territory is within weeks of handing down its final report. It will focus attention on juvenile incarceration across Australia. Melbourne-based Jesuit Social Services works with both adults and juveniles caught up in the justice system. Julie Edwards is the organisation's CEO, and Kath Neville is the Director of Advocacy and Strategic Communications. They both believe that training of youth detention staff is crucial to improving outcomes across Australia's troubled youth detention systems.
Well, Damien, it varies, of course, from jurisdiction to jurisdiction, but unfortunately, right now, I'd say we're not in good shape. I would say that Victoria for many years was a shining example, not just nationally but internationally, and that's largely because we had what I'd call an informal compact across all sides of politics, the judiciary, the police, public sector, community and health sectors. And that was really about a focus on keeping young people out of detention as much as possible. For various reasons, that's unravelled. And what we've seen, therefore, is Victoria becoming more like the other jurisdictions across Australia. We've had a stronger focus, I think, on punishment, about referring to young people as thugs.
And there have been a number of riots at the various youth detention centres, which have attracted a lot of attention, a lot of concern from across the community.
That's right. And that is very concerning. And we've also had young people committing crimes in very public ways in our community. And of course, that's of great concern to us. We'd have a particular story or understanding of why that's happening. And it's not just all about the young people. Once they're incarcerated, it's about how they're being managed.
There's been a big issue in Victoria around whether or not kids, when they've trashed these youth detention centres, could be housed in separate units at an adult prison. And the courts found earlier this year that they couldn't do that. Of course, we have the Royal Commission into the Protection and Detention of Children in the Northern Territory. That's going to hand down its findings over the next couple of weeks, probably. Huge problems in the Northern Territory.
That's right. Well, in the Northern Territory, of course, we see a massive overrepresentation of Aboriginal young people incarcerated. At times, they're up to 90% on remand. That means unsentenced. So what happens is when young people are remanded in custody and they have no certainty about what's happening, many, about, at least half, when it comes to the court, they are released. So we've had young people in there unsentenced, not knowing what their future is, and that in itself creates a very volatile environment. Often they're not able to access the programs that sentenced young people, children and young people are getting. So they're really just hanging out. It's not a good, healthy environment.
Okay. And of course, for most of us, we think of the Four Corners expose on the abuses at the Dondale Detention Centre, the use of tear gas, assaults, head coverings being tied to chairs, Dylan Voller. Huge problems in that system.
Huge problems, yes.
So Julie Edwards and Kath Neville, you've both been visiting various jurisdictions around the world to see how other comparable countries tackle these issues. Kath Neville, do we know what are the incarceration rates across the Western world? Are they roughly similar?
No, I think I actually went to the United States, and it's important to note right from the start, they've got very high incarceration rates, much higher than Australia.
And what about in Europe?
Yes, we went to Norway, Spain and Germany, and they are lower than other jurisdictions. Victoria actually is at about 18.6 point 100,000, and Australia overall is at about 34.3 point 100,000. They're not necessarily that high. Of course, in some countries, they're low.
Northern Territory is pretty high.
In Northern Territory, it's
sky high.
It's very high. And in actually, Northern Territory has the highest incarceration rate in the world, as far as I understand it. So while the United States is terrible, Northern Territory is up there too.
And including youth detention, yeah?
Yes.
Okay, but it's fair to say that it's very high in the USA. Australia kind of varies according to where you are. And in Europe, they're at the, generally speaking, at the lower end
that's
of the
right.
spectrum.
That's
maybe
correct.
More equivalent yes. to the eastern states.
And it's, can I just say one other thing? I think what's worth noting, though, for example, in Norway, which has an age of criminal responsibility of 15, so therefore, and they're not talking about a separate youth justice system. So there, we are talking not only about one of the lowest incarceration rates, 74 per 100,000, but we're talking about the lowest recidivism rate at 20%. lowest recidivism rate in the world.
You're talking there for both adult and juveniles.
That's right.
So you went and you looked at how youth detention works in various parts of the world. Kath Neville, you went, okay, it's not on everybody's radar, you went to Missouri, the state of Missouri in the Midwest. What did you see in terms of the accommodation there?
Yeah, we'd heard a lot about Missouri. It's called the Missouri Model. Years ago, they had a very high incarceration rate and they were one of the states in the US that realised this doesn't work. It's expensive, we don't get the outcomes we want, it actually doesn't make for a safer community. So they started shutting down their prisons and we visited a couple of the moderate care youth facilities and were really delighted with what we saw. Open spaces, facilities with no locked doors, only lock the doors to keep people out, not to keep the young people in. A real focus on education, school every single day within the facility. One of the facilities was on the edge of the woods, a big volleyball court, a ropes course. Was really different to what we would see here.
And so sort of home-like environments, and I think a maximum of 20 to 30 people.
That's right.
In
that's
each centre. What about places like Spain and Norway, Julie? You went to see their models. What do they have?
Most countries had a clear boundary and you knew you were in an enclosed facility. You knew you were in a secure facility. But once you're inside, the best ones we saw were small home-like institutions, usually up to 12 young people in any one unit. There might be
In Spain,
but also in Germany and in Norway. They were small home-like facilities. And in Spain, for example, young people are encouraged to take responsibility for the daily activities of their lives. So, for example, help in the cooking or the cleaning, preparation of the house for visitors, etc. So it was about normalising things because there's a big focus on the fact that you will be getting out and we want you to be an effective, productive citizen.
Kath Neville, how does that differ from your experiences of what you've seen in various parts of Australia?
In Australia, the focus isn't on what's going to happen after detention. Years ago, we saw kids in the youth justice facilities having leave before returning home, you know, practicing, going for job interviews, things like that, which actually happened in Missouri. We saw children having, you know, weekends at home, weeks at home before they would actually be released. That has not happened as much here recently.
You're talking about sort of low security people coming leaving the institution. A lack of locked doors, I understand, in Missouri. Look, I'm wondering what that means for the security of the kids themselves, because there'll be kids who'll be violent and they'll be violent against other kids. I mean, there's an issue there. We don't want to be Pollyanna about this.
Yes. It was really interesting. We talked to the head of the facility as he took us around to different places and he talked of swivel head security. And I think we would call it dynamic security. Because the staff have such good relationships with the kids and they're trained and have qualifications in child development, psychology, social work, they are able to keep a really firm eye on where the kids are at and pick them up on that. How did you sleep last night? What's going on for you today? You seem a bit off. You didn't eat your breakfast. Things like that. So they could really keep tabs on the kids. When we were there, we were free to walk around wherever we wanted in the facilities and we asked about security. And they said, yeah, the staff at all times are assessing and reassessing where each of the kids is at.
But kids are sometimes pulled off the street because they're violent, not just for property crime and what have you. What do you do with those kids? I mean, are those sorts of kids in that kind of model?
Yeah, there were kids with sexual offences and offences against the person, assault. There was one young person, I understand, with very serious assault charges. They have a period of assessment, a very strong period of assessment, before kids go into the facilities, but also during their time there. And then, of course, there are therapeutic interventions while they're there.
What about community engagement? I understand that in Missouri, these small facilities were quite closely connected to the communities around them.
Yeah, we were fascinated by that. So there was one facility that was actually on a college campus. There was another facility opposite a high school. And we asked the guy who was showing us around, you know, what does the community think of this? And he said, well, these are their kids. These kids belong to the community and they like them to be a part of it. So one of the things that really fascinated me was at one of the girls' facilities, on each of the beds was a brightly coloured quilt. And we were told that community members actually handmade a quilt for every new admission, and the girl would embroider her name on that and take it home as a reminder, really, of her stay there with the facility.
Julie Edwards, I imagine that most communities, you don't see that kind of relationship between local communities and juvenile detention centres here in Australia, do you?
No, you don't. And I think it's a shame because the more home-like and the more normality that can be preserved, the better. And we really would love that if young people do have to be detained, that they can be kept close to family and community, because maintaining those relationships is, we know, is a really protective factor. Damien, I just wanted to make a comment about what you said about security, because where the places we visited, we were very aware that there's always a handful of people who need to be held very securely, and we accept that. But as Kath said, it's really managed mainly through relationship. And the other thing that we really noticed was a gradation, or the ability to separate young people into, perhaps you've just come in, we want to keep a close eye on you, we want to understand what you need while we do a thorough assessment and planning.
Put you
and
behind then, locked doors, so you're not belting your fellow inmates.
That's right. And then you can progress. And it may be that as part of that assessment, the decision is made to have you in an open place right from the beginning, where you're in fact going out to the community for school but coming back every night, or going out to the community for work. So it really is based on the individual person, not having a one-size-fits-all, taking into account their needs and the risks.
Okay, and we don't have that system anywhere in Australia.
We don't have it nearly well enough. I think there are, and there's an growing understanding that we need to do that, but I think it's often been based on risk rather than need.
In the Northern Territory, there's been a big conversation around the Royal Commission process around the quality and the qualifications and the training of the people who work in this sector, because there were a lot of very disturbing revelations about people who seem to be very ill-equipped to deal with difficult, sometimes violent children. It's not easy. What did you see, I believe, in Norway? I think Norway, for you, was the most interesting in this regard.
Yes. In Norway, the correctional staff must have a 2-year qualification, and they're about to increase that to a bachelor. And what they're saying is that we need our staff. Our staff, those frontline staff, are the ones who will meet, greet young people, keep an eye on what's going on for them and manage them in terms of when all the other staff have gone home, for example, if there are teachers and social workers, etc. And so they have 2 years training where they, yes, they deal with how to keep the place secure and how to keep people safe, but they also study human rights and ethics and culture and child development, etc., and adult needs. So they're really rounded out, and they are the ones who have a strong relationship with the person. Every young person has a contact officer. So one contact officer will only have 3 people that they're keeping a particular eye on. And as we walked around the facilities, we saw people together, staff and prisoners, playing cards, playing music together. It was really sort of quite stunning to see the relaxed relationships that existed.
Do you see those kinds of interactions when you visit youth detention centres here in Australia?
No, I don't. I used to more, but I think the extreme focus on security at the expense, I would say, of relationship has meant that we've seen a much more mechanistic and transactional interactions rather than the sort of transformational relationship building approaches where a young person can start to examine their own behaviour and start to build a new life for themselves.
Is that because there's been some kind of shift in policy, or is it because maybe the number of kids in detention has increased and therefore there's less scope for that kind of thing?
Look, I'd say it's a couple of things. Change of legislation, change of policy meant we see more and more young people on remand. And that came in the previous government.
Where you're talking about Victoria. Is that a trend across the country?
Well, it's a trend across the country where there's less, I suppose, understanding of what might be going on and a push for tough on crime, which means that young people are less likely to get bail compared with remand. So we've had this huge overrepresentation of people on remand, as I said, which is very destabilising. That's a very hard environment for the staff to manage. As you said, these are some of our most demanding, challenging young people. And then what's happening is we're putting more of those young people together with staff who are finding it harder to cope and to manage. And then we're starting to see huge numbers of absenteeism. So you've got unqualified, inexperienced staff managing the most difficult and challenging young people in the community, and they're just not equipped for it. We really want to support staff. We think staff's the key element where we can get these relationships going and help young people turn their lives around. So we need qualified, well-supported, supervised staff.
You're telling me that if you could see one big change to our youth detention system, it would be staff.
Absolutely. The importance of relationship, the importance of experience and skill, it can't be undersold. And in Missouri, we found that many of the staff had been there 20, 30 years. So one of the staff members grew up on a peach farm around the corner from the facility. He had been working there for 25 years. So many of them had been there for a long time, were committed. It was their vocation. They underwent ongoing training and professional development, and their heart was in it. And especially through the eyes of the kids, there was a lot of respect. There was mutual respect. And I think the importance of ongoing professional development is critical.
And Kath, again, you'd confirm what Julie says. You don't see that so much here in Australia.
No, and it's not the staff's fault. They're put in really, really difficult and often scary situations. They don't have the qualifications. They're probably not paid for the what they should be for what they're doing, and they need much more resourcing.
Kath Neville, Director of Advocacy and Strategic Communications with Jesuit Social Services, speaking there with the organisation's CEO, Julie Edwards.